Ladies and gentlemen, this is the last segment today, and it's called Can We Talk Some More? We talked a little bit yesterday, and now we're going to talk some more. These are panelists that are going to answer some questions. Most of the questions, I would say, are for the individuals based on their speeches, but some of them are just general questions. For Paul Romano, the estate's code contains... Please try to limit your answer to 2 minutes or less.
I'll do my best.
I know they may be difficult. I know you're lawyers. But we have a lot of questions.
I've learned my lesson.
The estate's code contains the Supported Decision-Making Agreement Act, which allows a disabled person to name a supporter to access and obtain medical, financial, and other records to help the adult with a disability to make decisions. The supporter is not an agent, but does have a fiduciary duty to the adult with a disability. Does the presence of a supporter in an attorney conference with the adult with a disability destroy attorney-client confidentiality?
I don't think that it does. If they're part of what the client needs in order to have representation, then that's not going to destroy attorney-client privilege.
Thank you. Does anybody disagree?
No, I agree. I think there's a client representative under 503 specifically, and I think you can probably fit them in that capacity. But we as the panelists want you to know that all your questions also have to be under 2 minutes.
I'll say what?
We need all your questions to be under 2 minutes, please.
Oh, yes. That was 90 seconds. What are you talking about? Hey, listen, is that last mic not working?
Hello. It is.
Okay, why don't you just pull it closer to you? That might be the problem. All right.
Sure thing.
So regarding rules of evidence and guardianship, went over who can claim privilege and who can waive it. What if one claims it and a different one waives it? Is there any hierarchy in the list of people who can claim and waive?
I don't know that there's a hierarchy, but I suppose the patient would be at the top of the list. But I don't know that there's a hierarchy with the ones that I listed.
Okay. Is it a conflict of interest to represent an opponent to an application for administration on the basis that the applicant is unsuitable due to incapacity when the attorney for the opponent formally represented the applicant in an estate planning matter?
So the question is whether the attorney can represent the proponent if they formally represented the proposed ward in an estate planning matter?
Are you answering the question with a question, sir?
I'm just making sure I understood what the question was.
Sir, I'm not here to interpret the question. I'm here to...
I feel like I'm being picked on.
Okay, look, I found it a little bit difficult myself.
I know.
I was trying to figure it out before I got up here, but I'm a little slow. Yeah. Is it a conflict of interest to represent an opponent to an application for administration on the basis that the applicant is unsuitable due to incapacity when the attorney for the opponent formally represented the applicant in an estate planning matter?
Is the estate planning, I know you don't want questions, but is the estate planning matter relevant to the current application?
That's a great question.
Yeah,
because I think that's the question, right? I mean, you have a relevancy of two conflated engagements or not.
Uh-huh. So are we going to leave it at that?
Yeah, I mean, if they were instrumental, if they were drafting a declaration of guardian, that might be different than if they just drafted a will.
Okay. If an estate consists of separate and community property and it is necessary to sell property to pay the administrator's attorney's fees, which property should be sold, the separate or community property?
Is this to me?
This is who, I don't know who, it doesn't say.
I would take the position you would sell community property. I mean, again, it depends who my client is, right? But let's go with, neutrality here. I'd probably take the position the community property should be sold because that's within the supports of the community for that particular person. But again, it just depends.
Okay. As trust protectors are accepting a fiduciary duty and have the opportunity to refuse such an appointment, what documents are optimal for the appointment and acceptance of the trust protector? Are documents analogous to those for the acceptance and liability release for trustee? That might be a second question.